Everyone for being here tonight. It wasn't really advertised that I was speaking tonight, so I'm sure that's why there's so many of you. But I want to thank Mark. He's been asking people to speak on Sunday evenings, and I thank him for asking me. It's not my favorite thing to do, but I'm happy to do it. And if you're visiting with us this evening, I want to join with everyone else here in extending our welcome to you. You're our guest. And if anyone has anything, any questions about what we do here tonight, please ask us. And certainly if anyone has anything, any questions about anything that I say, please speak to me about it. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to talk tonight for just a few minutes about a topic, and I want to begin by asking you if anyone has seen this slogan. I've seen it on t-shirts and some other articles of clothing over the past few years, but it's a little slogan, a little logo, and it says, "No fear." Has anybody seen that? Some of our younger people may have seen it. I've seen it on skateboards, I've seen it on t-shirts, but it's a slogan that people have come up with. I think the people who make those products, the advertising people who came up with that slogan, I think they use it to convey an attitude. It's kind of like that slogan for Nike, "Just do it." The people who use this "no fear" slogan are trying to convey this hip boldness that I can do anything. I can flip my skateboard, I can jump out of a plane, I can ski down the face, I can surf the pipeline, I'm invincible, you can't touch me attitude. And physically, I think that's what that slogan is saying. But I want to turn it around tonight and talk about that slogan spiritually, take a look at it spiritually. And I want to talk about the subject of fear tonight. Fear is a Bible subject. It's used many times in the scriptures. And I think sometimes we focus so much on love and some of the other wonderful things in the Bible that we tend to forget about fear. And I want to take a look at it tonight. In the New Testament, there are three different Greek words that we translate into our English word fear. And the word fear is kind of like love in that respect. The Greeks had a couple of different words for love, agape and phileo and eros, that all got translated into our English word love. And it's the same thing with fear. They have three different words that have gotten translated into our English fear. And the three words that we find, the three Greek words we find in the New Testament are phobos, dilia, and eulabia. And I'm sure I'm mispronouncing them, but the important thing is what they mean. And I want to look at that briefly tonight. The first of these, phobos, had the meaning of fleeing, running away, and is caused by being scared or in terror. So I look at this as this is kind of the Stephen King kind of fear. This is the this is the kind of fear that causes flight, terrified, anxiety. I'm walking down the street, I see a tornado coming the other way, I turn around, I run. And this is the kind of fear that I've got a little bit of right now. This is the what I would call the panic fear. And this is a fear that we're all used to. We've all experienced it. I think it's, it comes from this word phobos, and this is where we get our word phobia. And we all know that there are many phobias in our life. There's arachnophobia, the fear of spiders. There's hydrophobia for those people who are afraid of water. Agoraphobia for those people who are afraid of heights. But in the New Testament, this word is used in both a positive sense and it's used in a negative sense. And I want to take a look at a couple of those instances tonight. Let's begin by looking in 1 Corinthians, the second chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. And I want to just read verses 1 through 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. "And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." So Paul's talking here about when he came to the Corinthians, to those people there in Corinth, and established this church. And he's saying he was physically weak, he was frightened, he was scared. But this fear didn't paralyze him. He continued to proclaim the word. He established a congregation in this locale. This fear didn't completely take over him. So I see it as being used here in a positive sense. And another instance where I see it being, this word phobos being used in a positive sense, is in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verses 19 and 20. 1 Timothy 5, beginning in verse 19, he says, "Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. Those who are sinning rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear." Paul's talking here about the proper way to accuse an elder or to rebuke him if this situation arises, and he says, "Rebuke those that are sinning in the presence of all, that the rest may also fear." I think he wants those others to be so scared that they would change their behavior if they were doing something wrong, if they were sinning. But I see this word phobos also being used in a negative sense. And we can find that in the book of 1 John. If we look at 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4. And I want to look at verses 17 through 19. 1 John 4, beginning at verse 17, says, "Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us." And I looked at this idea here in verse 18, that fear involves torment. Torment is that mental anguish, that extreme pain. And so I see it, the word phobos, being used here in a very negative sense. And I also see it being used in a negative sense over in Hebrews. In Hebrews, the second chapter, Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. Hebrews 2, beginning in verse 14, it says, "Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage." So here the Hebrew writer is talking about how Jesus became human. He became flesh and blood so that he could die and be resurrected in order to destroy the devil's power over death. And he says by doing that, Christ released those who had lived in constant fear of death. So here, fear is used in a very negative sense. It had completely paralyzed these people in the sense that it had produced a lifetime of bondage, is what the writer says. All their lifetime subject to bondage, verse 15. So that's the first type of fear that the New Testament talks about, phobos, the panic fear. And I think this is a very natural type of fear. It's an emotion that God gave us as part of our human makeup, and I think it's a good instinct so that when you see that tornado coming, that you do turn around and run and get out of there. It's a very natural thing. But in contrast to phobos is this second type of fear. That's the Greek word is delia. Delia denotes cowardness and timidity. This is what I would call a coward fear, and it is never used in a good sense in the New Testament. Every time the word is used, it's in a negative sense. And when the Bible talks about this type of disgraceful fear, it warns us of spiritual cowardice. And I want to look at a couple of instances of that. And the first one is in 2 Timothy, the first chapter. 2 Timothy chapter 1, and I want to look at verses 6 and 7. 2 Timothy 1. It says, "Therefore I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." So what he's saying here to Timothy is, God has not given us a spirit of fear. If you have this coward fear, it did not come from the Lord. This isn't a natural fear. It is learned. This came from somewhere else. And Paul tells Timothy, rather than this spirit of fear, the characteristics that a Christian, the characteristics of an effective Christian leader, the characteristics that we should all have, he says, are power, love, and a sound mind. So if this cowardly fear didn't come from God, where did it come from? Well, let's look in Matthew, the 8th chapter. Matthew chapter 8 also uses this word, Delia, the coward fear. Matthew chapter 8, let's look at verses 23 to 27. This is Jesus calming the storm here. Matthew chapter 8, beginning in verse 23. Now when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with waves. But he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was great calm. So the men marveled, saying, who can this be, that even the winds and the sea obey him? So verse 26 there is where the word is used. Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? So this lack of faith had led them to this cowardice. And frankly, I think from looking at this last reference, we can see that the Lord hates this type of fear, this coward fear. Let's look at Revelation, the 21st chapter. Revelation chapter 21. In Revelation, the 21st chapter, I want to look at verses 6 through 8. It says, and he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexual immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So here God lists the type of people that are going to be separated from him for all eternity, the type of people who are going to spend eternity in hell. And who's first on the list? Murderers, sexually immoral? No, the first one is but the cowardly, the fearful. This is that same word, Delia. So this is the coward fear. These are the people that turn back from following God. They're not brave enough to stand up for God. They are not humble enough to accept his authority over their lives. And God warns us about their type of fear. So that's the second type of fear. There's, first of all, we talk about phobos, which is the panic fear. There's Delia, which is the coward fear. And the third Greek Testament word that's translated fear, the third Greek word that's translated fear in the New Testament is this eulabia. And eulabia is defined as signifying caution first, then reverence or godly fear. It's that emotion of deep respect or awe. I've labeled it godly fear. And this word appears a few times as well. This is a holy fear, and we find it in Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Hebrews chapter 12. And let's look at verse 28 here. 28 and 29 in Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. So he's talking here about serving God acceptably, and the way to do that is with reverence and with this godly fear. It should be part of our makeup. It should be part of our service to God. And we find that Jesus possessed this godly fear as well. If we look back a few chapters in Hebrews 5, Hebrews the 5th chapter in verses 5 through 9, Hebrews 5, beginning in the 5th verse, it says, "So also Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, 'You are my son, today I have begotten you.'" And he also says in another place, "You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have much to say and hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing." So you see that in verse 7, he says to him there, "and was heard because of his godly fear." Again, that's this fear that we've talked about. The Greek word is eulabia. And we also find this word in the Old Testament. Proverbs 28 and 14 uses the word. Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 14 says, "Happy is the man who is always reverent, but he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity." This word reverent here is the same. This godly fear. So we've looked at three types of fear tonight. Phobos, the panic fear. Delia, the coward fear. And this eulabia, the godly fear. And in concluding tonight, the question I want to ask you is, what kind of fear do you possess? Which one of these three is on your spiritual resume? Are we bold enough to stand up for God? Are we humble enough to be a servant to him and to others? Is our faith strong enough that it's led us to have the godly respect and reverence that Christ had? Or do we pass up opportunities to defend God, to defend his word? Do we pass up opportunities to boldly speak about him and what he means to us, what he's done for us? Ask yourself that. You know, Solomon was the wisest man in the world, and he spent his whole life, a good part of his life, trying to figure out what man should do with his time on the earth, what he should call the meaning of life. And he used all of his resources to experience everything he could think of. And the book of Ecclesiastes is his search for this. And his conclusion at the end of the book, he shares what he's found. And I want to look at that. That's Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Solomon in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Isn't it funny that he doesn't say there, "love God and keep his commandments"? He says, "fear God and keep his commandments." He says the whole duty of man is to have this godly reverence, this third type of fear that we talked about, this godly fear, and to keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Can we say we are doing that? Do we spiritually have that same slogan, "no fear"? I want you to think about that the next time you see a shirt or you see something with that slogan on it that says "no fear." Ask yourself, do I have fear, and what kind of fear is it? Because I think fear should be part of our lives. It should be part of our spiritual resume. But it must be the right type of fear. It must be this type of fear that Solomon talks about, this godly fear. Maybe you don't have that kind of fear or reverence for God tonight because you don't have a relationship with God. Maybe you don't know him that well. Maybe you have never named his name or haven't become a Christian. But you can do that tonight. We can help you with that. You can certainly be baptized, and we can begin the process of keeping those commandments that Solomon talks about. Or maybe you are a Christian, but your fear has been replaced by the cowardly fear. We can certainly pray with you tonight and begin to change that together. We're asking you, whatever your need is, whatever type of fear you have tonight, let us know what your needs are as together we stand and sing.
and tender.